Okay, good evening. Oh boy, I hear some names being floated around. I don't know what's going on back there. But okay, so let's talk tonight a little bit about the halachas of muktzah. Halachas of muktzah are a set of halachos. We're not going to finish the whole thing this week. Maybe we'll do about half of it or so. But the halachas of muktzah are often misunderstood, are not understood well. You know, you have all the way from the little kids who call everything muktzah. You know, it's muktzah to turn on lights, and it's muktzah to cook, and everything on Shabbos is muktzah. That's just a common way of children expressing themselves when something is prohibited on Shabbos. And then you have a more sophisticated understanding that muktzah actually means something specific. It's not referring to just all the things that I can't do on Shabbos. Those things are called melachos. Those things are called isurei derabanan, shavusim, whatever you want to call them. They each have different titles, but those are different categories. Muktzah is a whole separate category. And honestly, muktzah, if you think about what the term muktzah means, muktzah actually means set aside. That's what it means. Right? The word muktzah means that it's set aside. And the idea being that anything that does not serve a real purpose on Shabbos is considered set aside, and it's not for Shabbos use, and because of that, we're not allowed to touch it, we're not allowed to move it, I should say, we're not allowed to move it. That's the halacha of muktzah. That's in essence, you know, in a nutshell, that's the idea of muktzah. Anything that does not have a function, a purpose on Shabbos, is set aside from our use on Shabbos. It's muktzah, it's set aside, and therefore we're not allowed to move it. This is also a common misconception that muktzah, people think we can't touch muktzah. In reality, you can't move muktzah, right? You're allowed to touch muktzah, you just can't move it. So for example, there's nothing usher about going over to a car and putting your finger on the car on Shabbos. Right, I'm not doing any malacha, I'm not turning on the car, I'm not opening the door, I'm just touching it. Right? Certainly touching it with your finger is not moving it, unless you're, a bodybuilder, Superman, you know, but just touching it is not, you're not going to move the car, you're touching it. So touching it is not prohibited. Now if you lean on it, you push it, things like that, then it starts to move, so then already it could be problematic. But just touching something is not something that's muktzah, is not problematic. Obviously the lighter the item, or the smaller the item, the more you have to be careful, because very often touching it will lead to moving it. You know, you touch a pen and it moves. So those things are more concern. But that's the idea behind muktzah, that anything that doesn't have a purpose is set aside, and I'm not allowed to move it on Shabbos. Now the question is, why is this, right? Why do we have this this prohibition of muktzah on Shabbos? Now muktzah is only derabanan, right? There's no prohibition in the Torah called muktzah. The Torah does not refer to the idea of muktzah. The Torah, we know, discusses 39 melachos, right? That's what the Torah says, lo sasu ko melacha. And Chazal learned out that the Torah is referring to the 39 melachos of the Mishkan. So we have melachos, we have av melachos, we have toldos. Those things are all midah oraisa. Midirabanan, we have some of the other things that we spoke about, some of the other prohibitions. Muktzah is only derabanan, right? The Rabbanan came along and established this prohibition of muktzah. Why? Why did they establish the prohibition of muktzah? There's several different reasons that are given by the Rishonim. The Rambam himself gives three of them, and then there's one more that we're going to see from the Riven. If you look at source number one, the Rambam in the 24th parak of Hilchos Shabbos asks exactly this question. Umi pnei ma nagu be'isr zeh? Why do they have to create this prohibition of muktzah? Right? Well, why do the rabbis have to come up with this prohibition of muktzah? Well, what's the idea behind it? And it, you know, it's funny because it's come to be one of the most known prohibitions of Shabbos. Everybody knows about muktzah, right? You know, certain things people have no clue about it. Gozeis, tochein, some of the lametes malachos people have never heard of, right? But muktzah, everybody knows. Muktzah is a derabbanan. Everybody knows it. Why? So writes the Rambam in reason number one, shelo yihi etiltul b'Shabbos ketiltul b'chol. So I shouldn't be moving things around on Shabbos like I do during the week. So that it shouldn't be like a day, like a weekday for me. Shabbos should be special. What's going to happen on Shabbos? The same thing that happens on Sunday. What happens on Sunday? We have a day off. So what do we do on our day off? All the things that have to get done. right? All the things around the house that have to get done, all the things you know that are around in our lives, all the odds and ends that need to get done. We do them on Sunday because that's our day off. So if Shabbos didn't have this prohibition of Muktzah, says the Rambam, everybody would take all those things that they do on Sunday and they would move them to Shabbos. Things that are not malachos, right? I'm moving, I'm moving books from one room to the other. I'm moving the furniture around. Not violating any malachos. I'm not turning on any lights. I'm not cooking anything. You know, I'm not violating any malacha. I'm just, I'm rearranging. I'm moving things around. I'm busy. I'm busy with all these odds and ends that I'm normally doing on a Sunday. I'm doing them on Shabbos. Right, you're sitting home doing nothing. Literally, that's what the Rambam says. You're sitting home doing nothing. You have to find something to do. So Sunday we find things to do. So Shabbos you also find things to do. And he says that's not what the Torah had in mind. When the Torah talks about Shabbos, it says leman yonuach. You should rest on Shabbos. Shabbos should be a day of rest. Doesn't mean Shabbos should be a day when I'm schlepping around and I'm moving things around and I'm rearranging and I'm doing all these things. Again, even if they don't involve a malacha, they don't involve any particular prohibition, midel rice or midel rabbanon. But nevertheless, that's not what the Torah had in mind. So writes the Rambam, that's why Chazal instituted muktzah. Because once you have this prohibition called muktzah, that means that half of these items I'm not allowed to move. I can't move rocks, I can't move things that are muktzah, I can't move pens around, I can't move scissors, I can't move any of these things around. They're all muktzah. So what their muktzah? So now I'm limited in what I can do, and that's part of the intention of what the Torah wanted. So that's number one. Number two, writes the Rambam. You might actually come to use certain kalim for things that are prohibited. So for example, if Chazal said there's no problem moving a pen on Shabbos, you just can't write with it. You know, we have a malach of kosei, you're not allowed to write, but hey, no problem moving a pen. Right? Why not? You're allowed to move a pen. So then you might come to write with it, writes the Rambam in reason number two. If I'm dealing with what he calls, which is an important category for Muktzah, kelim shemalachton le'isser, literally, items that I use for a prohibited purpose on Shabbos, pens, hammers, things like that, kelim which I use for prohibited purposes on Shabbos, efshe sheyisasek bohen ma'atu yavali de melacha. If I'm allowed to move pens around, I might come to write with them. I'm going to have a pen in my hand. I'm going to have a pen on, on top of my ear, in my pocket, wherever I keep my pens. And I'm just going to come by habit. I'm going to come to write something, to jot something down. So therefore, Chazal wanted to prohibit that. They wanted to avoid that. So therefore, they created this prohibition of muktzah. Reason number three, right, where it says gimel there. The ode, the Rambam says, listen, you have some people that don't work. Either they're retired, right? People don't have a job. So you have people who don't work. So writes the Rambam, these people who don't work, Shabbos is going to look an awful lot like the rest of the week for them, unless you make Shabbos different somehow. Writes the Rambam, the old mipnei miktzas ha'am einam bali umnios, elevetelim kol yameim. Some people don't work. Kigona tayolin v'yoshvei kronos, shekol yameim hein shov simi malacha. They're never working. Right? They're never doing malacha in the sense that we know malacha when it comes to Shabbos. And if you didn't have any of these dirabana prohibitions, if I was allowed to move things around and to just talk about things, like what we discussed last week, you're not going to have a shvisa hanikeres. It's not going to be recognizable that this day is any different than any other day of the week. So therefore the Torah says, therefore Chazal say, that you can't involve yourself in muktzah. Some of the other dirabanan prohibitions he seems to be including in this as well that we talked about last week, in terms of talking about doing malachos and things like that. So therefore, we want to make a shvisa hanikeres. We want to make a general type of shvisa that everyone, whether you're a person who does malacha regularly, whether you're a person who doesn't, either way, it'll be an even playing field and everybody will be on the same page.
So, I understand the three rationales, but is it important that we define those rationales from a Lumbus perspective? Because the first one almost sounds like an asmatha as it relates to making Shabbos Kodesh.
Okay.
The second one sounds like it's a gezeira. The third one almost sounds mussar.
Okay.
Better.
Right.
When for the purpose of posketing, does it matter?
Right, so
what the rationale is? I mean, Rambam gives you a smorgasbord, but
are we of different reasons.
To have
right.
To isolate
right.
What
yeah,
is.
I mean, it seems that the Rambam he's not giving you options here. What he's saying, I believe, is that these were all included in what Chazal had in mind. And these were all concerns of Chazal, all of these things. Now, for example, the second one, which is only which basically says that you can't move a pen because you might come to write. So that's nice for Kelim Shemalachtan Le'Isser. But we're going to learn, there's like five, six categories of muktzah. Some of them are not kelim shemalachtan le'iser. You know, so some of them are not some things that are muktzah on Shabbos have nothing to do with violating an iser. So that reason wouldn't apply to those. You're right. If you take each and every one of these, there might be certain halachic ramifications, but we generally assume that these are all reasons behind the iser of muktzah, not different options as to what the one reason is.
Isn't it unusual that there would be consideration given to such a small segment of the population when making a gezeirah, so to speak, that's,
right,
totally on everyone?
I mean, small segment of the population. Have you been to Florida?
Still, compared to all the Jews, I would say it's still a small...
Yeah, to an extent, you're right. To an extent, you're right. But listen, there are plenty of people... again, whether they're retired or for whatever other reason, who are not working. And listen, you have some people who are working, but not working in the sense of malacha, like we know it. You know what I mean? So even those types of people, you can have... you talk about a person who's a psychologist. I mean, if you're a psychologist, you can do whatever you're doing during the week, you can do on Shabbos. You open up the room, leave the lights on before Shabbos, make sure the couch is nice and cozy, and that's it. And you can counsel people... just like you do on Shabbos, you can do during the week. So there are people, even though they're quote-unquote working the way that we would, consider working, they're not working in the sense of malacha, where you would notice the difference.
Right, but this was done...
Well, you didn't have...
Just physical work. There wasn't
right.
Intellectual work.
I wouldn't say there wasn't intellectual work, but you didn't have it the same way. You're right. I mean, I don't think, this was well before Freud... the field of psychology was not yet well developed. You're right, but you're right to that extent. But it is a small segment of the population. And again, touching on what I mentioned to Josh, if this was the only reason, so then maybe you have a valid point. But considering that this is one of several reasons why they instituted muktzah, so then I think that we're taking all these into consideration altogether, we can understand.
It also would include part-time workers. And there are millions of part-time workers all over the United States, right?
Right. Now, right, that's also true.
Again, this was done way before part-time workers.
Some of that part-time workers.
There were.
Okay. Full-time workers that are only part-time workers.
Right, also true. And there are people that are part-time workers that are full-time workers. So. Okay. The Ravid here on this Rambam in source number 2 offers a fourth reason. Which the Rambam doesn't give, but the Ravid himself feels that this is something important also. And it's interesting because it's something that we don't necessarily, it's a little bit hard for us to relate to this because we have Eruvin nowadays. But we know that there's a malacha called Hotzah, right? You're not allowed to carry, if you don't have an Eruv, you're not allowed to carry from a private domain to a public domain, Rosh Hashayachit to Rosh Hasharabim. You're not allowed to carry 4 Amos in Rosh Hasharabim. Again, these are all things that, Baruch Hashem, in a sense, with the advent of the modern day Eruv, we don't deal with, regularly, but occasionally we do. But writes the Ravid, Kimi pnei chiyuv hotzah asru betiltu masha asru shu gedel lehotzah. He says part of the reason why Chazal prohibited you from moving certain things is because they actually wanted to minimize the things that you were handling on Shabbos, because they were nervous about hotzah. So listen, so obviously they can't say don't touch anything on Shabbos; that would be ludicrous. A person has to go around. You have to be able to touch things on Shabbos. But here they could limit a little bit what you were touching on Shabbos. So that way, there's less of a likelihood that I'm going to carry things if half the things that I have in my house I'm not allowed to touch on Shabbos. So that was an additional reason, says the Ravid, why Chazal instituted this prohibition of muktzah to protect against this problem of hotzah. Again, something we can't relate to so much nowadays. But this was actually part of the reason why many of the rabbanim. Around, I don't know exactly what years, but I think around the 1970s or so, when Eruvin were becoming a little bit more popular, why many of the Rabbanim in America were in favor of Eruvin was specifically for this reason. What the Ravid was saying, you know, many, many centuries ago, the Chazal instituted the prohibition of Muktzah, but they were concerned about Hotzah. People were carrying, and they were concerned about Hotzah. So here too, the Ravid says, at least partially, we'll have something that mitigates that a little bit. Okay. Now, there are several different categories of Muktzah, several different categories of Muktzah, and I want to discuss each category in and of itself, and hopefully that will bring some level of clarity to this, somewhat misunderstood, category of halachos, and hopefully we'll have a little bit of a better understanding after this week and maybe next week as to what exactly is included in these prohibitions of Muktzah. The first one I want to talk about is what we call Muktzah Machmas Gufo. Muktzah Machmas Gufo means something that is inherently set aside, right? Muktzah again means set aside. Machmas Gufo means because of itself, inherently. This is something that inherently is set aside. It's completely, it serves no function, and it's inherently useless on Shabbos. It's not considered a utensil at all. It's not considered a keli at all. And therefore, it has no purpose, and it's muktzah on Shabbos. The example that the Shulchan Aruch brings in source number 3, he says, "Davar she'ein bo shaychus keli." If you have something that really is not a vessel, it's not a utensil at all, it serves no constructive purpose on Shabbos, kigon sororos o avonim. He says, for example, stones, pebbles, right, rocks, things like that, asur l'taltalam, you're not allowed to move them on Shabbos. So this is category number 1. This would include a broad swath of items that many people don't even realize are muktzah. So for example, many things that you find outdoors which serve absolutely no purpose on Shabbos. So he gives the example of rocks and stones and things like that. Grass, dirt, twigs, branches, all these kind of things which do not serve any function on Shabbos. You have a pile of leaves, doesn't serve any function on Shabbos. There's nothing that I'm doing with that pile of leaves that I would naturally do on Shabbos. There's a stick lying on the ground. There's dirt on the ground. There's, whatever the case might be, many of these outdoor things, which really serve no function on Shabbos, those things they're all muktzah. It's called muktzah machmas gufo. They're inherently useless. They're inherently useless on Shabbos. And therefore, they're muktzah. You're not allowed to move them. Now, obviously, you're allowed to walk on them. You're allowed to walk on dirt. You're allowed to walk on grass. That's called tiltu b'gufo. I'm not moving it with my hands. I'm just moving it with my body. As I'm walking, that's totally fine. Even if you kick some stones or some branches out of the way as you're walking, totally fine. But to pick up a branch and to just play with it, well, would be problematic on Shabbos. Yeah.
But there is a way to set them aside.
Okay. Okay. Good. 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 So there is a way to set them aside. I don't really. Yeah, I lived in Meir Sharm for 3 years and I never saw it once. So I think it's a little bit of a myth. I think it's a myth. But
before you get around to setting it aside,
yeah.
What if you use a rock or a stick as a bookmark?
Okay, we'll get there. I'm going to talk about that.
So you could make it useful.
Right. So I'll talk about it. Again, these are things that generally are inherently useless. They're not things that people normally would use. Normally you don't go outside and pick up a rock and use it as a bookmark. Maybe if you're outside and your papers are blowing away, you'll use it as a paperweight. But it's not the type of thing that normally people just go outside and pick up some leaves, pick up some branches to use, unless you want to use them for firewood or something like that, to use the branches. But we'll talk about that. I don't want to get into designating, because designating is very complex as to how you do it and when you do it. It is possible, right? As Joe's mentioning, there is a possibility of designating these items before Shabbos for use on Shabbos. Depending on what you want them for, sometimes you have to designate them permanently, like a permanent designation. Sometimes it could be temporary. Sometimes you actually have to do something to them before Shabbos, build with them or something before Shabbos as a means of designating. So there is a way of designating them. I don't want to get into it because it's a little bit complex. If you feel the burning desire on Erev Shabbos to designate some rocks or some twigs or leaves or grass for your purposes, be in touch with me Erev Shabbos and we'll work out a plan of exactly how to do that. But assuming that that's not going to be the case, I don't think we need to go into it right now, and it is quite complex. But there is a way of doing it that you can make them, so to speak, non-muktzah on Shabbos, that you can move them.
Are there any leniencies for someone who has, say, OCD and things out of order, we interfere with their peace of mind, moving them to actually facilitate rest on Shabbos?
So that's a good question. I've never heard of a heter for moving muktzah. Although I can imagine how that can happen. You know, in a house, let's say some muktzah thing. I mean, in my house, every Shabbos there are things being spilled all over the place and knocked over. And I can imagine that a person with let's say real OCD. You know, where the D is there. You know, the disorder, not just a person who likes things neat. Okay, so you know you can make do until after Shabbos. A person with a real disorder, I've never heard of a heter, but it's an interesting question. I've never heard of one. If it would really cause them great distress or something like that, sometimes there are ways of dealing with it. You know, a person who's experiencing distress and these kind of things. You know, maybe you would ask a guy to come and move things. But I've never heard of a heter just for a person to just move things because they're in distress. But it's an interesting question. Okay. So now, so something Josh mentioned in terms of moving them. So there are two ways that people are familiar with moving muktzah, but I'm going to introduce these two methods. But I'm going to tell you that when it comes to muktzah machmas gufo, so for example, we're talking stones, branches, things like that. You know, many of the outdoor things, you're only allowed to use these two heterim through a non-Jew. You can't use them yourself on Shabbos, these two heterim. You can use them through a non-Jew. We're going to learn that there's another category of muktzah, coming attractions, where you can actually use these two heterim yourself. But when it comes to muktzah machmas gufo, it has to be specifically through a non-Jew, an eino Yehudi. That's if you look in source number 4, the Mishnah Berurah is very clear, that letzorech gufo umakoma. Okay, these two heterim are called number 1, tzorech gufo, and number 2, tzorech mekoma. We'll have to define each one of those two terms in a minute. Shari al yideino Yehudi b'chol gavne. So the Mishnah Berurah here has a blanket statement, which is very helpful. That basically, if you employ a non-Jew, okay, we haven't discussed the laws of asking non-Jews to do things on Shabbos. Maybe we'll get to that. But if you employ a non-Jew, you can't just ask a non-Jew to do whatever you want on Shabbos. That we know, right? There is an isser of amira la'akum. But if you ask a non-Jew to move something, to move, let's say, a pile of rocks, and that pile of rocks is either letzorech gufo or makomo, then it's permissible. Now let's define what those two terms mean. What does that mean, letzorech gufo or letzorech makomo? So it says the Mishnah Berurah in source number 5, what does letzorech gufo mean? Dehainu shetzorech leguf hadavar lemelacha acheres shel heter. I need to use this item for some permissible purpose on Shabbos. Right, so Josh gave the example of I don't remember your example, but you're using the rocks as a doorstop. Okay, you're using the rocks as a paperweight. Totally permissible. Nothing wrong with a paperweight on Shabbos. Right, I'm allowed to hold down my papers if they're flying away. I'm allowed to prop open a door on Shabbos. There's nothing wrong with that. So says the Mishnah Berurah. That's called tzorech gufo. I'm using the guf. I'm using the body of this item itself. I'm using the item itself for a permissible purpose on Shabbos. I'm using the rock as a paperweight. I'm using the rock as a doorstopper. Whatever the case might be, I'm using it for a permissible purpose. I'm using the rock as a nutcracker. You know, I lost my nutcracker, so I'm using a rock as a nutcracker, okay? Whatever the case is. So in those cases, says the Mishnah Berurah, that you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to use it for you in that way. You can't do it yourself. I can't take a rock and on Shabbos pick it up and use it as a doorstop. But I can ask a non-Jew to do it. I can ask a non-Jew to use that rock as a doorstop. I can ask a non-Jew to use that rock as a paperweight to break the nuts, whatever the case might be. I'm allowed to ask a non-Jew to do that. That's called letzorech gufo. What is letzorech mekomo for the need, for the use of the space? If you look at the Shulchan Aruch in source number 6, he defines letzorech mekomo, dehainu, shetzorech lihishtamesh b'makom shehakli munach sham. I need to use the space where this rock is. Okay, I have a chair, and my kid put a whole, you know, his rock collection on my seat. So I need to use that seat. I need to use the chair. So okay, you know, you can tilt over the chair, you can spill them off, things like that. But I can't take the rock, pick it up, and move it off of my chair. That's muktzah, right? The rock is muktzah on Shabbos. So what am I allowed to do? So if I have a non-Jew nearby, I can ask the non-Jew, can you please move that rock from my chair for me? Even though, again, I'm not allowed generally to ask a non-Jew to do malacha for me on Shabbos, but in this case, if it's letzorech mekomo, I'm allowed to ask a non-Jew to move it. Okay. So those are the two. Those are the two ways that you can deal with something that's muktza machmas gufo. Again, generally, you're not allowed to move it, but if it's letzorech gufo or mekomo and it's through a non-Jew, then it's permissible. The other category, the second category I want to discuss, is what's called muktza machmas iser. Okay. And many of us, you know, are not familiar with all these categories. The third one is the most popular. But the second one is called Muktza Machmas Isser. What's Muktza Machmas Isser? So says the Shulchan Aruch has a very interesting case. Let's say I have I have something that broke on Shabbos. My oven broke, a chair broke, a bench, table, whatever the case might be. Okay? And now, one of the legs broke off of this chair. Right? One of the legs broke off of this table, whatever the case is. I can't really use it the way it is. So in order to use it, I have to fix the chair. I have to fix the table. I have to pop the leg back in, whatever the case is. Okay? You're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. Right? You're not allowed to fix something that broke on Shabbos. Misakein mona, makeh bepatish. You're not allowed to put the finishing touches on any sort of keli, any sort of utensil. So if I have a chair that broke and it's not usable on Shabbos, I can't fix it to make it usable on Shabbos. So am I allowed to move the chair? So writes the Shulchan Aruch in source number 7, Kira shenishmita filu achas miyarchoseha. If you have a stove, and imagine one of those stoves on legs, right? It has four legs, or whatever, you know, a table with four legs, a chair with four legs, and one of the legs fell off on Shabbos. One of the legs came out. Also letaltala, writes the Shulchan Aruch, I'm not allowed to move that stove. I'm not allowed to move the chair, the table. Okay? Why? And the idea being, because you might come to fix it. You might come to fix it on Shabbos, and fixing it on Shabbos is also, I'm not allowed to fix it on Shabbos. I'm not allowed to put back that, you know, to put that chair back together on Shabbos. So therefore, you're not allowed to move it on Shabbos at all. The Rambam adds also a case of a bench. V'chein safsal aroch, shenishmat achas meiragleha, kol shken shtayim. If you have a long bench, one of the legs fell off the bench, two of the legs fell off the bench, whatever the case is, the also the taltala ulahanicha al safsal acheres veleishev aleha filu nishbara mi beodyom elim kin yoshav aleha kach pa machas kodem haShabbos. Right? So writes the Rama, I'm not allowed to take that bench. Imagine, right, one of those camp benches. You know, they have the two pieces of wood on either end, and that's what you sit on. And one of those pieces of wood broke off. Okay, so I can't sit on this bench now. So I want to take the bench and I want to prop it up on something else. I'll prop it up on another bench. You know, and that way I'll be able to sit on the bench because the broken end is propped up. Writes the Rama, you can't do that. You can't move the bench on Shabbos. It's muktza. Right? Why? Because if you move it, you might come to fix the bench on Shabbos. And therefore you're not allowed to do it. That's called muktza machmas iser, that it's set aside because of the possibility of a transgression, the possibility of something that is of violating something that's awesome.
So going back to the categories where you're actually allowed to have a goy move something for you.
Right.
Why doesn't Chazal have that same concern as it relates to, so if I have a goy do one thing for me, that there's a possibility that I'm going to ask him or he's going to end up doing something else for me that's beneficial that they can't do, using the logic of the third example,
right,
where I can't move it because I could come to fix it, couldn't you make the argument that you start going down this slippery slope that you're asking a boy can do this, but he can't do that.
Right.
Then when I come to put the rock on the paper,
so it's a good question.
Turn the light on,
right,
because, so you can read the paper that they now put the rock on.
It's a good question. We'll learn a little bit. Hopefully, we'll learn. You know, in next. I don't know exactly when, but hopefully, we'll learn about Amir la'akum. You know, one of these days about the prohibition of instructing non-Jews to do things for us on Shabbos. It's very pertinent halachos. But that's also a dirabanan. So sometimes you have to be careful with, you know, because of the concept of gzeira, that the rabbis never made a double gzeira. So if they prohibited one thing because it might lead to, you know, they prohibited X because it might lead to Y, they're not going to now prohibit, T because it might lead to X. They're not going to prohibit, you know, an additional thing because it might lead to something which might lead to something else. It's already too far removed. It's too far-fetched. So because of that, you know, it's not, we have to learn a little bit more about Amir al-Akum. It's a good question. But you know, I don't think we're going to. I don't think Chazal were prepared to go that far. I mean, listen, the Chazal could say, you know, don't do anything on Shabbos because you might come to violate an Isser. So obviously, they allowed you to live your life on Shabbos, and they had to be the ones to make decisions as to what exactly we're really concerned is going to lead to something worse, and what we can say. Okay, you know, we can assume that that you're okay. You know, listen, you know, you never know. Somebody might do something wrong, but you know, you hope for the best.
So then, the fixing would be Teresa.
It's binyan. I mean, if you look at the end of the Ramah there, gamos el hachnis a regular sham mishum binyan. The question is binyan bekelim? Is that also midoraisa midrabanan? I don't remember offhand.
But if it, then you argue your
the same thing, zerilixer, right. Yeah, well, that's a good point. It might be deoraisa. I don't remember offhand. Yeah. Okay, but that's what we're concerned about. Now, writes the Mishnah Berurah, this is only if the leg just slipped out and really you can pop it back in. Right? Writes the Mishnah Berurah in source number 8. V'davka benishmat de'ef shelechabro. It's only when the leg slipped out and I can reconnect it. I can pop it back in. V'yalkein asu afilu betiltu mishum shema asi litaka. So therefore, Chazal said you can't move the bench because you might come to fix the bench. You might come to pop the leg back in. Avala nishba regel echa delo shayach bo sheva yitaka. But let's say the leg popped out and broke. So there's nothing for me to do on Shabbos, right? I got to order a new bench. You know, I can't fix this, okay? You know, maybe Herb can fix it, but I can't fix it, right? So there's no way for me to now fix that leg. The leg is broken, okay? El tzarich lasos regel acher. I have to have a new leg made. You see that this was written a long time ago. Right, nowadays, what would we say? We would say, you got to throw it out and buy a new bench, right? Rashi says, no, you have a new leg made. Right, that's what you do. You don't throw the whole thing out. You know, nowadays we just toss it. You know, put it out by the curb. We'll buy a new bench. We're not concerned on Shabbos that you're going to come to make a new leg or buy a new leg. You know, and fix the bench. That concern, you know, we're not that concerned. People are not going to do that on Shabbos. To take the leg which just slipped out and you're going to pop it right back in, that's a valid concern, right? But once the leg broke, once the leg is not usable anymore, then it's okay. Then you're allowed to move the bench. We're not concerned anymore. Nishmat also a regel mikvar ve'ein kat also a regel klal. Let's say the leg is not there; it slipped out a week ago, and you know, my kid took it and he lost it. I have no idea where the leg is anymore. Again, right? This prohibition won't apply. El asafsahu below regel ein isur lismocha so al safsal acher dekan lo shayach shema yitaka. Again, the whole prohibition here, the whole problem here is that we're concerned that you're going to fix this bench. So if there's a possibility of fixing it, then you can't move the bench. Once that possibility doesn't exist anymore, the leg broke, the leg is missing, so then I'm allowed to move the bench. So those are considerations where you're allowed to move this type of muktzah, which is called muktzah machmas isser. And again, we can employ the same two attainers that we said earlier, that just like we said when it came to muktzah machmas gufo, that a goy is allowed to move it, the tzarach gufo or makomo, so too in this case, a non-Jew is allowed to move it, the tzarach gufo or makomo. So if I need the bench for something, I need to, I need to prop open the door. So I want to take this bench and use it to prop open the door, or hold open the door, or whatever the case might be. I can ask a non-Jew to do that. If the bench is in the way and I need that space, I can, again, I can't move it myself because it's muktzah, but I can ask a non-Jew to move it. So those two heterim would apply as well. Now the third category, and this is the one that most of us are familiar with, is what we call a kli shemalachto le'isser. And that means what I referenced before, that's a type of keli, a type of utensil, an item that's normally used for a purpose that is prohibited on Shabbos. So a pen, right, would be a prototypical example of a kli shemalachto le'isser. I'm not allowed to write on Shabbos. There's a malach of kosev. I'm not allowed to write on Shabbos. So a pen is a kli shemalachto le'isser. I'm not allowed to build on Shabbos. So a hammer is a kli shemalachto le'isser. Right, those types of kalim, things that I'm not allowed to use on Shabbos because they involve malacha. So that's a klisha malach to listen.
What was the last category? The second one?
Muktzah machmas isser. That's muktzah machmas isser. It's muktzah because I might come to violate an isser. This is a klisha malach to listen. It's an item or a utensil that's whose malacha is isser. Right? The whole purpose is isser. Okay, the Mishnah Berurah writes that it's something that is specific for Isser on Shabbos, right? If you look at the Mishnah Berurah in source number 9, Klomar Shem Yuchedes L'davar She'asur Lasos B'Shabbos. It's specific for a purpose that is prohibited on Shabbos. Va'afilu Imrak Rov Melachto L'Isser, Hu Gam Kein B'Chlal Zeh. And even if it's just, let's say the most of the time, it's used for Isser, but not all the time. It would also be considered a Kli Shemalachto le'Isser. However, let's say you have something that, that's used, sometimes it's used for something that's prohibited, and many times it's used for something that's not prohibited. So, for example, let's say you have, we're going to look, I'll tell you right now, something that people don't realize, a pot, an empty pot on Shabbos, right, is muktzah. Why is an empty pot muktzah, right? It's, most people don't know this. Why is an empty pot muktzah? Because a pot is used for cooking. Cooking is usur on Shabbos. So a pot is a kli shemalachto le'isser. It's no different than a pen, right? A pen, I pick up the pen, I can write with the pen. I pick up a pot, I cook with the pot. That's what I do with it, right? So since the majority of its usage is, it's used for something usur, it's used for cooking, so therefore it is usur. Now, if the pot has food inside, then you're allowed to move it. Then it's not muktzah, right? So if I have a soup pot with food inside, I'm allowed to move that pot with the food inside because I'm moving it. I'm being metaltel because of the davar hamuta, because of the thing, because of the soup, which is inside the pot, because of the cholent, which is inside the crock pot, whatever the case might be, and therefore it's okay, right? As long as it has food inside. Well, but once it's empty, then it's muktzah.
So what happens if you start with a full pot and it's empty because you serve it?
Right.
Then it's...
It's a good question. So now, once it's empty, it's a klishim lachto l'isser, right? And technically, you can't move it. We're going to learn that there are heterim to move a klishim lachto l'isser, but once it's empty, it's an issue. Yeah.
You can't use it to swat a fly.
A pot? I didn't. Well, maybe you can. We'll see that in a second. Well, who says you can kill a fly on Shabbos?
Oh, okay.
Right. You can maybe swat at the fly on Shabbos. You know, just to how many people actually hit the fly anyway? But let's say, for example, let's say you have some sort of a dish that a pot is is always used for cooking, right? That's what people use pots for. Let's say you have a nice dish which they call like an oven to table type of dish, right? So you can use it for cooking, but it's also a nice dish. You know, sometimes you use it just for storing things. You put it on the table. You put some fruit inside. It's a nice dish. You know, you can use it for cooking, but you don't have 50% of the time I use it for non-cooking purposes, and 50% of the time I use it for cooking purposes. So what do you do with something like that? So that would not be considered a klishim alachta le'isser. It has to be that the majority of the times I use it for a prohibited purpose. So if I have some sort of a dish that 60% of the time, or even 51% of the time, I use for cooking, so that would make it problematic. But if it's a dish that it's 50-50, sometimes I use it for cooking and sometimes not, so then it's not a kli shemalachto le'isser, because it's a kli that's sometimes used for isser and sometimes used for heter, depending on what my mood is. Sometimes I'll use it for this, sometimes for that. So you do have things like that. It's not, it's not so common, but you do have things like that, so it's not so simple that all these things are prohibited.
So when we're talking about that category, is there a distinction between using it in private and using it in public?
No, I don't believe so.
There be a more assigned concern in public because somebody who sees you carrying it doesn't understand the function that you're intending it to use it for?
generally we don't find that there's a Maris Ayin. I mean, Maris Ayin is a little tricky because Maris Ayin, anything that's prohibited because of Maris Ayin is prohibited even in private. That's the halacha in Maris Ayin. Maris Ayin is a little bit of a misnomer. It's not just because of what people will think. Even in private, Maris Ayin is prohibited. Also, we don't find, when it comes to muktzah, if you have a heter to move it, we don't find the poskim talking about Maris Ayin. We're not concerned that people are going to think you're violating an isser. You know, we have heterim, you're allowed to move things. So we assume that if you're moving...
that everybody is able to move X. So you have some instrument, right, that you're using it for a certain function. You know that what you're using it for, and what you're using it for is legitimate, whatever the example is.
Right.
And nobody else who's going to see you is going to know, seeing that you're carrying something which one would normally associate as being
muktzah. Right.
But you're saying that
we don't seem to be concerned by that. Okay. Yeah, we don't. Yeah, we generally assume. I guess there are enough heterim that we assume that a person's using it for a mutter purpose. No, we'll see some of the heterim now. I'll just introduce the first two tonight, and then maybe next week we'll continue with some of the others. But the main two are the two that I discussed earlier in regard to the other categories, but here you can actually do it yourself. So that is Letzorach Gufo and Letzorach Mekomo. So let's just look at source number 10, which is the Shulchan Aruch. And he writes this very clearly. Klisha Malachtel Isser Mutu Letaltelo. If you have a Klisha Malachtel Isser, such as a hammer, a pen, whatever the case might be, you're allowed to move it. Bein Letzorach Gufo, you're allowed to move it Letzorach Gufo or Letzorach Mekomo. Now again, Letzorach Gufo means you're using the item for a permitted purpose, which he now gives an example. Kegon Kornesh Shel Zahavim O Nafachim. Let's say I have a hammer, right? So it's a blacksmith's hammer, it's a goldsmith's hammer, whatever the case might be. It's a hammer that is normally used for a prohibited purpose. And now I want to use it, Liftsoabo Egozim. I want to use it to crack my nuts, right? A nutcracker, okay? Or Kordom Lachtoch Bo Devela. Or I take an axe, right? An axe is usually used to chop down trees. You're not allowed to chop down trees on Shabbos, right? But I take an axe, and I want to, I have a devela is like a fig cake, you know, a very tough fig cake, and I want to cut through it, and I can't do it, right? Or let's say a burnt cake or something like that. You know, you can't cut it, so you need an axe. So I take my axe, and I'm using it for a permissible purpose. That's okay. Okay? Your wife might use the axe if you're not careful. Bein letzorach mekomo, okay? Or you're also allowed to use, so that's one heter for moving a klisha melachtel iser. Heter number two, writes the Shulchan Aruch, is letzorach mekomo. What's letzorach mekomo? Dehainu shetzorach leishtamesh b'makom she'akli munach sham. Right? Again, my kid took my hammer and plopped it down on my seat. So I want to sit in my seat. Right? Or a kid took a hammer and put it on the kitchen counter. My wife needs the space in the kitchen counter to set out the food.
Is Letzorach Mekomo, is it included if I see it in the middle of the floor and it bothers me?
No, so that's not called Letzorach Mekomo. Just because it bothers me in that area, that's kind of like what Stephen was talking about, that's not Letzorach Mekomo. Letzorach Mekomo means I need the space. Not I want the space clear. Right? I need to use the space for something. Okay, but let's say you have it, you know, something's in your sink. You know, you have, your kids threw, or how about a pot, right? You have a pot in your sink, okay? An empty pot. So empty pot is muktzeh. But now the empty pot is taking up my whole sink. So I can't use my sink on Shabbos if this pot is sitting in my sink. So now I'm allowed to move the pot, which is a klisha melachtel iser, because it's letzorach mekomo. I need the space. I need to use that area where the pot is sitting, right? So I'm allowed to move the pot, letzorach mekomo, and put it somewhere else, okay? I'm allowed to do it. Aval, however, the Shulchan Aruch says, if you're just moving it to protect the item, aval mechama letzel. Let's say you left your beloved hammer, you left it out in the sun, you know, and it's going to bleach all the beautiful colors of the wood, of the handle of the hammer, or whatever the case is, my favorite pen, I left outside, it's going to get ruined by the rain, it's going to get ruined by the sun, so I want to just move it inside. Right? So it's not Letzorach Gufo, I'm not using it for any permissible purpose. It's not Letzorach Mekomo, I don't need the space where it's sitting. But it's just Mechama Letzel, I want to protect the item itself. Says the Shulchan Aruch, that you're not allowed to do. Tainu Shein Letzorach Letaltel El Venesha Yari She Yishavar O Yiganim Shom Aser. You're not allowed to move it just for its own protection. I can't move it so that it doesn't get ruined. I'm not allowed to move it so that it doesn't get stolen. All of those things are prohibited. So I'm not allowed to move it. One other interesting example of Letzorach Mekomo is, let's say that you have something that's a klishim lachtel iser, and it's negatively affecting you to the point where you have to leave that area. Okay, so the example that's given is, let's say you have a fan. Okay, a fan is a klishim lachtel iser. I'm not allowed to turn on a fan on Shabbos, right? A fan is muktzah. Okay, a fan is a klishim lachtel iser. But now, if the fan is blowing on me, right, and I'm uncomfortable, I'm cold, I don't like the wind, whatever the case is, and I'll have to leave. I can't sit here with this fan blowing on me. I'm freezing. So then the halacha is that you're allowed to move the fan, right? You're allowed to turn the fan away from you. That's also called the tzorech mekomo. It's not a classic tzorech mekomo. Classic tzorech mekomo means the muktzah item is sitting here, and I need this spot, so I'm allowed to move. Here, it's a little bit of a different tzorech mekomo. It's something that, you know, it's negatively affecting me to the point where I'm going to leave my space. I would like to stay here. But now I have to leave because the fan is blowing on me. It's making me cold. So I'm allowed to move the fan so that I can stay in the space where I am. That's also called Letzorach Mekomo. And that would also be mutter on Shabbos to move that fan. Those are the two main heterim of Letzorach Gufo, Letzorach Mekomo. We'll continue next week in Mirtz Hashem with some of the other heterim of moving these items and on some more applications of muktza also.
So with this, I don't have to ask the kohen to do it?
Correct. Right. When it comes to a kli shemalachta l'iser, I'm allowed to move with the tzarech guf or mekoma without asking a goy. I'm allowed to do it myself. So for the first two categories of muktza, you have to ask a goy. If we're talking about muktza machmas gufo, like rocks, sticks, grass, leaves, things like that, or muktza machmas iser, a broken bench that I might come to fix, those items, I'm not allowed to move the tzarech guf or mekoma unless I ask a non-Jew. He's allowed to move the tzarech guf or mekoma. But when it comes to kli shemalachta l'iser, like a pen, a hammer, something like that, I'm allowed to move it myself with tzarech guf or mekoma.